I was a submarine officer in the Navy, and I found myself having some issues that I had never imagined, acute anxiety issues and unexplained infertility. But I started to, you know, decide, how can I partner with God here to heal myself? I think there's something deeper about food that God has revealed to us in Jesus. It's supposed to be life-giving and nourishing. Perhaps that food is not really food, right?
And yeah, so, you talk about being overfed yet undernourished, and I usually call it like toxic hunger. And that's really the state of the average person. They're overfed and undernourished.
You're listening to the Visibly Fit podcast. Hey, I'm your host, Wendy Pett. And every week, I'll give you holistic, practical solutions for everyday issues related to nutrition, healing, functional fitness, and behavior modifications. As a naturopath, fitness expert, and wellness coach for over 20 years, my goal is to empower you to reach for greater health and to rise up to your next level of living in mind, body, and spirit. You were created with greatness in mind. It's time to own it. Are you with me? Then let's dive in.
Hello, hello, and welcome to this episode of the Visibly Fit podcast. I'm your host, Wendy Pett, and it is a delight to be here with you today. I'm excited about our show today because we really have a guest who is so inspiring, and he really embodies the power of resilience and faith. His name is Andy Felton, and I heard him on another podcast, and I thought, man, I got to get this guy on here. I knew you all would appreciate his thoughtful approach to health and wellness and his faith and just his theology and philosophies. And so I just really wanted to bring him on. I know you're going to enjoy this show thoroughly. He is a devoted Christian. He's a husband and he's a father of two boys whose journey has led him to become the author of a book called Nourished by Design. And that's what we're going to be talking about in this podcast is his book. And it's so, I mean, he's such a prolific writer. It's very thought out, well thought out. And I think you're going to appreciate the book as well, not just the interview. But Andy explores the profound intersection of faith, food, and health. And he offers insights that can transform your understanding of well-being. Now, he's got a background as a former nuclear submarine officer, and he's a proud graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy. And Andy brings a unique analytical perspective to his work. Currently, he is serving as a manager at Los Alamos National Laboratory, where he combines his expertise with a heartfelt mission. And his mission is really to help others align their physical and their spiritual well-being with God's design for flourishing. That's right. God wants you to flourish, not just go through life. He wants you to thrive and flourish. And so after overcoming Andy's own health challenges, which we're going to get into in this episode, he really just has a passion for nurturing both body and soul, and it really has never been stronger, and you'll be able to hear that in how he answers and shares today in this episode. But he resides in Los Alamos, New Mexico, and he is an active member of Crossroads Bible Church, where he shares his journey and faith with his community. So I hope you'll join us as we just jump into this conversation with Andy Felton, and we just explore the amazing healing power that really lies within our bodies and the divine guidance that God gives us to nourish our lives. So you don't want to miss this episode. I'm excited to have him on. Enjoy. Well, welcome Andy Felton to the Visibly Fit podcast. It's a delight to have you here.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here, Wendy.
Yeah, this is so fun. You know, I was reading your book, and actually I first heard about you through my friend, Dr. Ben Rawl, who's your friend too, because you've been on his podcast. And man, you were just, first of all, you're a prolific writer, and the way you unpack things is just, it's deep, it's powerful, but yet it's not so deep that you don't understand. Like, you can unpack it where just the average person can understand as well. So I have that appreciation about you that you can go deep, but yet anyone can understand. And so you've written this book called Nourished by Design. And I want to just dive in first to find out, who's Andy? Why did you want to write this book? And I know that you had some health issues yourself. So I'd like to kind of dive into that story first.
Yeah, I took a roundabout way to this book, as many people do. I think almost anyone in this field, right, will say the same thing, that there was something in their life that caused them to go down this road and realize that whatever we're doing in America and the West is just not working. And that was a story for me. I was a submarine officer in the Navy, and is a demanding job. And I found myself having some issues that I had never imagined would possibly occur to me. And it was mainly around like acute anxiety issues. And then coupled that with unexplained infertility between my wife and I, you know, not knowing exactly what's going on there as we're trying to start a family. And that's funny, because it's those two issues are pretty emblematic of, I think, society's main epidemics right now. Yeah. As a whole, right? And so I decided I wanted to take a different route than the conventional route, partly because as a submarine officer working with nuclear weapons, there is really no pharmaceutical route. Yeah, there's no pharmaceutical route that you can take there. So the conventional pathway was just not going to work, right? And so I started to, you know, decide, how can I partner with God here to heal myself and to just improve my life in a way that I can be more joyful and vibrant and do the work that God has put before me, whatever that is. And so I started reading all sorts of health and nutrition books. Of course, there are many to choose from. And I think that there was a pretty standard fare of secular books out there, that most of them had something interesting to offer, but oftentimes they were somewhat contradictory. One guy was saying, you know, totally go all in on meat, and the other person saying go in all in on vegetables, and the other person saying avoid lectins and this and that. And you're like, how do I really think about this stuff from a kind of a fundamental perspective, in a way that also aligns with my faith and what I believe humans are created for, and how God has revealed himself. And so I took the deep dive, decided that it wasn't out there, at least as far as what I was looking for, and decided just to go down this road and see where it landed. And like you said, I wanted to be really not too deep, to be not approachable, but I wanted to write it in a way that would be satisfying on a theological level. That's why the book devotes about 100 pages at least to just the theology before we really even get into the science. But then I wanted the science to really speak for itself and back that up as well in a way that was deep and engaging for people that are curious and that do want to get down to the bottom of things rather than some of the superficial answers that I had been hearing. So that's kind of the genesis of how this occurred. And here I am.
Yes. And as you were talking about your anxiety and then infertility, I know you have two children. Is that correct?
Two children now.
Something must have kicked in. Yes. And so, and the anxiety went away. Yeah, you're doing well there. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, there are always times where you're like, you know, things don't like fully just go from 100 to zero. Right. But like, I feel much better, much more able to cope with stress in ways that I was able to before I started to have those issues. And I feel like, a lot of mental health issues are issues of the brain, right? They're issues of insulin resistance in the brain. These are the real root causes of a lot of these things, right? And so I think just, getting your nutrition right, getting your habits right when it comes to sunlight, exercise, all those other good things that you talk about so much, right? That really is the key to all of this stuff.
Yeah, it's definitely the lifestyle choices. And you mentioned a couple people in your book that are near and dear to my heart, Jordan Rubin being one, and then my brother from another mother, Dr. Scott Stoll, which is super cool. I was like, you mentioned Scott. So just talking about the accumulation of doing, or you know, choosing unhealthy choices and over time what that looks like and how that pans out. But let's go back really quick to as an officer, you know, you were dealing with a lot of stress, number one, right? But what kind of nutrition were you consuming? Like, what does it look like?
It looked a lot like the standard American diet, I'd say. You know, it's like 25.
Which makes me just, fume, because this is our military. We should be feeding them and fueling them really well.
And you know what? I will give it to the cooks are pretty good on the submarine. People would think that maybe the food would be worse than it is as far as the taste and the quality. It's not so bad for being on a submarine, but just, you know, my own personal habits were just not quite there. You know, I would have considered myself to be pretty healthy. And indeed, I mean, I went to the Naval Academy. I was a good athlete all, you know, my whole life. And so you wouldn't have looked at me and said like, oh, that guy is like not, you know, he's struggling health-wise. But it shows up in different ways for different people, obviously. Yeah. And so, you know, my standard breakfast as a 25-year-old was like chocolate chip Eggos with like Jif peanut butter Aunt Jemima slathered all over it. I used to make a sandwich out of it, and that was my thing.
I don't know if I've ever had chocolate, whatever you said. What did you call it?
You don't want to. I mean, it tastes pretty good, I guess, but it's not how God has revealed food to us. And no. I think that the biggest thing is, as I've cleaned up my nutritional habits since then, especially in like the exploration that I've gone on, I think the biggest surprise also was how if you really look at this from a biblical perspective, you don't just you know, a lot of people think about food as like, oh, just a container for calories, a container for nutrients. It's only as useful as far as your body can use it. But I think there's something deeper about food that God has revealed to us in Jesus and what it's meant for. And I think it really can, if you have the right view of it, it can improve your faith as well. It gets you and promotes an embodied faith where you're thinking about more than just simply how many calories am I getting in this next meal or how many calories am I not going to eat? It's a lot more than that.
Well, let's dive into that, because that is one of the things that really inspired me to be prompted to reach out to you is your faith and the direction in which you just wrap all of this together. And so I want you to kind of break it out for us how you wrote just your philosophy. But before we go there, I'd like to know, have you always had a great faith in Christ? Was there like a turning point for you, or were you brought up in the church? What was that like?
Yeah, I was brought up in the church. I would have always called myself a non-denominational Christian throughout my whole life. But I will admit that I kind of fell away in like the high school and college years, as many people do.
Join the club. me.
And it was around this time
grateful
that I started.
For grace.
I think, you know, part of my struggles health-wise, which are, you know, nothing compared to what some people deal with. But I do think it was God kind of gently tugging and disciplining and trying to get me back to faith. And so that's, I think that these journeys kind of coincided. I'm, you know, not somebody who would have had any of this background, whether theologically or from that scientific perspective, when I set out to write this book. And I think that I've grown in both of these ways over the last several years. So, yeah.
Well, and what an opportunity for your cute family, you know, to be brought up by just an awareness of, you know, just having solid foundation in Christ, but also how food is something to be consumed with gratitude, as you say too, but also how it's not how we tend to go after food. It's more of it can be an act of worship, if you will, in the way in which we care for our bodies and fuel our bodies. And so let's talk a little bit about that, because as you turn to the ultimate physician himself, through and through. It changed the course and the trajectory of what you're doing now with writing this book and other things. But what anyway, but I'm just thinking of the Godhead of the family, how it's going to just create such a ripple effect with your children and of course your wife. And I'm sure she's maybe she was already health conscious as well, but I'm sure it's just so solid. So let's talk a little bit about that and how when one person makes the decision to I don't want to use the word get right with God, but I'm just saying to get in alignment with his will for your life and not to be so stubborn and out of his will, how it changes just the joy in your life, how it changes those around you and how you show up.
Yeah, I think one of the themes that I identified that I really wanted to convey in the book was, do you have an embodied faith or an abstract faith? Right. And those are two different things. And I think that a lot of American evangelicalism is geared towards kind of a private faith that is more potentially abstract and intellectual. It shows up in your daily devotionals or Bible reading or going to church on Sunday or small groups, but it doesn't really always show up in all of life. Right. Are you translating your faith into everything that you do, right? And I think that that's the biggest piece, right? Is there is this perception in Christianity that, you know, God just wants my faith. He wants my belief. And he doesn't care about, you know, how many Twinkies I eat, right? Like, and if anything, those Twinkies will just get me to God faster, right?
And
so that's the kind of thing that it's not a terribly uncommon approach, right? And I think that
I think that's faith, an excuse, if you want to know the truth, to eat that Twinkie.
Absolutely. But you know, a faith like that I don't think is genuine, because it doesn't really bear fruit. It doesn't actually reveal itself in the daily habits of life, right? And so eating, I mean, this is the most incarnational, embodied thing that we do, right? Every single day you're eating, you know, three times a day, maybe more, maybe less. But it's something that for all of humanity, we've been struggling to put food on the table. That's been like the primary concern. That's the thing that you work for and that you spend a lot of your time doing. And so if God isn't showing up in your diet one way or another, then you have to question the kind of fruit that you're bearing, right? Is your faith really enacting itself in your daily embodied existence, right? And so I wanted to promote something that that is more natural, that provides a framework for how people can understand what that even looks like.
That's so good. I love that. Yeah, because I think with the way Americans are today, you know, you say we're working to put food on the table. Well, that's true, but it's so much easier, quote unquote, easier to put that food on the table, but it's not really food per se. It's that standard American diet. And so we take it for granted, and therefore coinciding with faith, taking our faith for granted, our relationship with the Lord for granted, right? Like there's this correlation between the two.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you mentioned how easy it is now. I mean, I don't think these lessons sink in the way that they were supposed to, right? God revealed to us food and our needy bodies to demonstrate to us how insufficient we are as people and how he alone satisfies. And food then becomes paralleled with his how he satisfies us spiritually as well, right? And this might have been more natural for Christians 300 years ago to understand. And that's because food was more difficult to get, right? And now it's cheap. It's easy. You can work, you know, most of the stuff that we're buying is not food, right? But that's very different from what it was like 300 years ago. And so I think we have and especially difficult just in the world that we live in, where, like you said, most of the food isn't actually food. Yeah. It doesn't actually bear the marks of any sort of divine design whatsoever, right? If anything, it's a corruption of that design. Yeah. And so you're really missing out on these lessons that God is trying to teach us when he gives us needy bodies and he satisfies us with food.
That's so good. So I have a little garden outside because we don't have a lot of land, but I have a little garden. And the other day I pulled off the harvest from the garden, right? I literally had two small strawberries, I think three tomatoes, and like a little bit of romaine lettuce to make a salad, right? And I told my husband, I said, oh my gosh, can you imagine like if we literally had to live off this garden, we would be so hungry. And it helped me to really have this greater appreciation, right? For coincidentally, I was reading your book as well, but nonetheless, I just had this greater appreciation for how long it takes for this food to grow and just how I've been, you know, nourishing it and watering it and caring for it. And it's like a baby, you know, like I'm always making sure that it's protected by the, you know, not, that the rabbits and the bunnies aren't, or the deer aren't eating it and just different things. And so I just think about the farmer, like you're talking about 300 years ago and beyond, and how they had to work the land and had a greater appreciation. And so as we are in this era of quick fix, instant gratification, kind of microwave meals, how do we turn that around? Like, I mean, I think there would be so much to be gained if we all just had a community garden or, you know, an individual garden that we are cultivating the land I think we learned so much.
Yeah. I mean, what if churches had a garden outside?
Yes. Well, some right? do actually. Like, I have seen it.
Instead, yeah. This is something that Joel Salatin talks about all the time. Like, what if instead of having like this well manicured, like flower garden that has like pesticide sprayed all over it, what if the church actually cultivated a garden and fed the community with it, right? Like, I'm not saying that that's going to solve all our problems, but that's an example of, I think, how the church can participate in promoting abundance, right?
Right.
The average person,
I don't know, wants to work for their food. That, you know what I mean? Like that kind of working the land for their food. So it has to be a mindset shift, right? And a spiritual shift.
Well, you know, I think we have this very intellectual society, this intellectual modern society where we have a laptop economy and a lot of white collar jobs out there and everyone has a college education. And then they think of farm work as applying only to, you know, hicks and immigrants, right? And
right.
There's this perception, but I mean, there's something true about that. Not that perception necessarily, but there is a level of truth to the idea of farm work today. When people are looking at farm work, what kind of things are they seeing, right? Are they seeing the farmers are having to go in with a Tyvek, you know, hazmat suit on and cut off the beaks of their chickens so they don't peck each other to death because they're in confinement cages?
Horrible.
They have to inject their pigs with God knows what to make sure that they're docile and that they don't eat each other. And they have to go spray pesticides and then go back to Mexico and have all sorts of cancer outbreaks and things like that. Or maybe you even fall into a manure lagoon, right? People have died that way. It's kind of somewhat frequent. But if that's what farming is looking like, this lifeless abyss of just monoculture, pesticides, it's not really an example of abundance or godly, you know, living, right? Like it's not something that people are enticed like, oh, I really want to go be a farmer or a rancher when that is kind of the image that's in your head, because that's what you drive by when you're driving by cornfields and stuff like that. Right. So, you know, what if farming did look a little bit more like, I'll use Joel Salatin as an example because he's pretty well known and because he wrote my foreword. But what if it did look like his farm where it was, you know, it's diverse. He's not spraying chemicals. It's a dignified, God-honoring work that is something that people would potentially want to do, right? And so we have this idea that, you know, we should reduce the amount of people in farm work and reduce the amount of people that it takes to make food. Why? Right? Like that's not how it's ever been. And if you're reducing the amount of the workforce that it takes to make food just so that you can, you know, have that workforce correct the problems that food is causing or non-food, fake food is causing.
Well, they want the money, right? With the non-food, and they can produce that really quickly.
Yeah, the people that could be farming and doing dignified work are instead trying to engineer better pharmaceuticals and better agricultural poisons, and to solve the, you know, the countless list of chronic diseases that people have because they're eating a bad diet, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's tough.
It's really gross when you think about it, when you just kind of peel back the layer upon layer of this onion, so to speak. And it's just, it brings you to tears to see what we've done to ourselves as a society, right? Like, we're to blame. And so I think, you know, if more people could just open up their eyes and see that, wow, okay, I could actually do something different in this scenario that could, you know, make an impact. I'm just one person, but if I do it, and then, you know, my husband's doing this, and so it'll start to create that ripple effect. And so it's not supporting the non-food companies out there. It's stop buying the junk, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the easiest thing. You don't even have to give up your white collar job, and you can just, you know, go to a little bit better grocery store and buy a little bit better food, right? Buy from brands that you know have been consciously produced, right?
Right.
And that's a little bit of extra effort. But, you know, ultimately, I think it's worth it. And it's one of the ways that you demonstrate membership and creation, that you're fostering this community that you live in, that you are inseparable from. And so, I think it's a really important part of just the little things that people can do, even if they don't want to just go start a farm or start ranching, right? Like, not everyone is going to do that.
No, they're not, because people get caught up in what's known as the pleasure trap, right? And so they do things with the least amount of resistance. And that's just kind of how people are wired, unfortunately. So if we could start to do things with a little more resistance and have a little more intention around what we're doing, then we will ultimately become more satisfied. And so you do talk about intentionality when it comes to how we eat. And let's talk a little bit about what that intention looks like.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different ways you could go here when it comes to like intentionality, right? But
faith.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about like the farming piece, right? And there's kind of like this environmental perspective that you could look at, and just the stewardship perspective. How are you stewarding the environment, and how is your diet actually promoting or demonstrating your membership with creation? And we kind of already talked about that a little bit, but then there's this whole other piece of really understanding what food is, how it's revealed to us, and what it's supposed to be to us, right? It's supposed to be life-giving and nourishing. And that's why Jesus, who is our ultimate true food and true drink, that's what food is, right? It's supposed to be everything that Jesus is, right? That he's life-giving and nourishing. It's supposed to be at least a picture of that, just something that you can hold every day and say, yeah, this is just a little piece of what it's like to be nourished by Christ, right? Spiritually. And so if food doesn't testify to that at all, because it's lost its trace of, that it's been overly manufactured, or that it doesn't testify to the reconciliation with society that should be a part of your diet, or it doesn't promote genuine thanksgiving, then perhaps that food is not really food, right?
And so, you talk about being overfed yet undernourished, and I usually call it like toxic hunger. And that's really the state of the average person. They're overfed and undernourished, right? So it's not giving them that life-giving nourishment as we are desiring. Same with, you know, maybe, I mean, I would say, I mean, well, I can't say that because that's a general statement. But typically, when something's out of alignment, like your choices with how you're taking care of your body, it usually spills over into your faith, your finances, your relationships. It's usually kind of spills over in other areas. So you may not be getting nourished in your faith walk as well, or in your relationships. You know what I mean? It's kind of all this toxic hunger, overfed and undernourished kind of soup, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. It, you know, does your diet testify to God's life-giving abundance? And does your, you know, a lot of this, when we talk about overfed and undernourished, I mean, that's mostly, I think, a physiological issue, right? That's metabolic dysfunction in a nutshell, right? Where we are eating stuff that's edible, that might look like food and taste like food. And it's, you know, maybe a food-like substance, but it's not actually doing anything for us, and it's not nourishing our cells, and then our cells become dysfunctional, and then we have a bad relationship with food, and that spills over. That affects how we're wired, right? That affects the hormones that are being produced that are telling us we're hungry when we're not. You know, when we've got blood sugar swings up and down, things like that, right? It becomes very difficult to exercise self-control in all things when your body is not in control. When your cells are undernourished and underpowered, they are telling your brain all sorts of bad things, right? And it can affect your spiritual life, because this is where things like gluttony and other sins and non-temperance really come into play and become develop themselves and manifest themselves is a lot of times just because we're sick, right? We just have a bad relationship with food, and this is just what our body is telling us to do.
Right, right. And that bad relationship with food so often stems from just a self-hatred too. Like, you know, we can't love our neighbor unless we love ourselves. And so often we just don't love ourselves, and we're not willing to, or don't even recognize it in the beginning. And just those emotions drive poor choices so often. And then it just becomes this cycle, and you just don't know how you got there. And it becomes that accumulation over time of that broken down system that you've been engaging in, right? So. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, it's self-defeating.
It is. So, all right, well, let's talk a little bit about metabolic dysfunction, because you dedicate a lot to that, because that is why we get our bodies are diseased. And so let's kind of unpack that a little bit. You do a great job of that. And I just think, you know, for the average person listening, you know, they may remember a little bit from science class about, you know, the cells and the mitochondria, the powerhouses, and then this and that. But when we talk about, you know, metabolic dysfunction as a whole, let's kind of just break it down and just see what you have to say about that.
Yeah, I mean, simply put, I think metabolic dysfunction is just cellular disease, right? It's the inability for your cells to make enough energy to power themselves for all the things that they have to do. And then at the same time, to be able to cleanse themselves of the metabolic byproducts, right? There are two things that they have to do: make energy and clean themselves, right? And if they can't do those things, if one or the other is not going well, then you're going to end up with...
Just reach for an energy drink.
Yeah, exactly. That might work for a little while. No. Might work for a little while. But I like to think of metabolic dysfunction as like the stem cell of disease. It's just like a stem cell can grow into any of the 200 plus cell types that you have in your body. Metabolic dysfunction or cellular dysfunction can grow, can manifest itself in any of the chronic diseases that Americans especially are dealing with today, right? And a lot of people just don't recognize that metabolic dysfunction is the central disease that we deal with. It is the epidemic above all epidemics. And that might sound a little depressing, but I hope that that's actually hope-giving, hope-inspiring, because maybe you have three or four chronic diseases. Maybe you're taking three or four prescription medications, right? all you have to do is correct one thing. Correct how healthy your cells are. That's it, right? So there's only one thing to worry about there. And so I think ultimately that can be pretty inspiring and life-giving. And so, you know, really, what does this actually look like? And so I break it down into what I believe that the sign of metabolic dysfunction is insulin resistance. This is the thing that you can 100%. Easily diagnose, right? You can, and the problem is, which, you know, the one of the biggest problems with our preventative medicine structure in America is that we don't even test for insulin on a standard blood panel. And insulin is this hormone that your pancreas makes that shoves blood sugar, shoves glucose into your cells, whichever cells will take them to try and lower your blood sugar after you eat. And it's this master metabolic hormone. And if you're insulin resistant, your cells are crying out for a reprieve. What they're saying is, hey, I am dysfunctional and I can't take any more of this glucose. So I'm going to shut the door and sorry, insulin, I know you want me to take this glucose, but I cannot receive it, right? So that's why I think it's the sign. It's the sign because it's not necessarily the cause of our problems, but it is the way that we can identify it. And if you are fortunate enough to get a blood panel that has fasting insulin and fasting glucose, you can compare those numbers and you can figure out what your insulin resistance level is. And that'll track really well with how metabolically healthy you are, right? It's as simple as that. But then if you look a little bit deeper, what I talk about is being the prime culprits or the prime mechanisms that advance metabolic dysfunction. I think we're talking about inflammation and oxidation, or kind of these ugly two-headed monster that we deal with. And people talk about inflammation all the time, right? A lot of people have a basic idea of what this is talking about, but this is really just the slow fire that's burning in your body, right? And a lot of times it's a response to oxidative stress, which is too many positively charged particles in your body, too many waste products, a lot of oxidative stress is driven by your cellular inability to cleanly make energy. So there's all sorts of toxic waste products that are produced, and these things will react with different portions of your body, different cell types, and they'll cause all sorts of haywire. And so they can also cause inflammation to go up. And so they inflammation and oxidation are like the yin and yang. They interact with each other and they can often influence each other. And a lot of what metabolic dysfunction is just uncontrolled oxidation and inflammation. And then, so I even dive a little bit deeper than that. And I talk about, okay, so what are the things that are actually causing this oxidation and inflammation in our bodies that's resulting in insulin resistance, AKA the sign of metabolic dysfunction? And there's a lot of things you could talk about here, but I think that the biggest ones are mitochondrial dysfunction, leaky gut, and mineral imbalances in our body. And those are the three that I harp in on and that I discuss and that I provide some sort of remedy for, I think, in the biblical principles of eating that I present later on. But I think the biggest one probably is this mitochondrial dysfunction, right? The mitochondria are the little organelles in your cell that powerhouses of the cell. That's what the old, biology textbooks say, right? And we have this idea that we have one mitochondria per cell, but, you know, it turns out that a lot of your more metabolically active cells, like those in your heart and those in your liver that are producing all sorts of energy, have thousands of mitochondria that are constantly producing energy from the food that you're eating, right? And so if they're not able to make energy cleanly, if you're feeding them bad food, it's like feeding a Ferrari, like the 86 grade gasoline, like it's just going to start sputtering. Yeah. And it's not going to make energy. And it's going to be like, what the heck did you give me? Yeah. Right? Like I can't make energy out of this. And it's going to cause all sorts of backfires and it's going to cause all sorts of, oxidative byproducts and things like that, that are really fueling this epidemic of metabolic disease. And so in a nutshell, that's kind of the framework that I use to describe this.
Yeah, that's so good. And speaking of liver and with metabolic disease and the mitochondria, anyway, the liver, it seems like so many people just kind of dismiss the liver because, well, we can grow a new liver. It grows back. You know, they just take it for granted. But so many people are dealing with fatty liver disease, right? Not even cirrhosis of the liver, but fatty liver from the quasi foods that they are eating and just over the long haul of abusing that liver. So what is, I'm just curious, just on a personal level, what is like one, I'm sure you have many, but what is one non-negotiable choice that you make on a daily basis that is like, this is what I do every day to ensure that I have, you know, an ample way to rid my body of toxins.
Oh, man,
like I rebound.
That's good.
Like, I don't know what, or vibration plate or, you know,
hey,
what's kind of your thing?
Morning routine. And it was wild and elaborate, but yeah, I picked up on that. Like, oh, wow. That sounds like fun.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if there's one thing. I really like to move in some way every day. Like if I do not, you know, work out somehow, if I don't hop on my assault bike and crank out 10 minutes and get a little bit sweaty, it's just a rough day, right? That's really the main non-negotiable for me, because there's so many other things. There are foods that I like to have and that I like to have routinely, but none of them I think are like as non-negotiable as just simply like getting out and moving, doing something. Cause you know, if you have a desk job like that, you can realize, oh man, I haven't even moved all day today.
Isn't that crazy? People are like, oh my gosh, I haven't even gone to the bathroom. I'm like, how can you not go to the bathroom? They're holding it. And it's really wreaking havoc on their, kidneys and everything else. But yeah, moving our body helps things move, you know, it helps those toxins move out as well. So that's just important. So good. Is there something that you and your family like to do, you and your wife or you and your kids, that along the lines of movement, y'all like to go for a walk, or is there anything you guys do as a family?
Yeah, you know, we live in New Mexico and it's really beautiful this time of year in summer. It's a fantastic time. So we spend most of our time outdoors. So we're at 7,000 feet. It's sunny every day and in the 80s. And so we spend all of our day outside. You know, we don't have too much of a structured routine where we're like, oh, we're going to go do this and we're going to go on our walk because, you know, one of the kids is going to be, you know, having a rough day or something like that. But we always end up on the trampoline or riding trucks or riding bikes or, you know, just doing something, whatever it is, or just picking weeds. You know, we've taught our kids that it's fun to pick weeds. And so they like to go,
they don't know any better right now. It's fun, kids.
Yeah,
it's fun.
Yeah. I think just getting outside and getting sunlight and movement are like, if I can do that every day, especially with my family, and if I can get them sunlight and get them movement, that's what it's all about.
That's good. Well, let's talk about sunlight, because the power of vitamin D, and energy. And so let's unpack that a little bit. I know you even talk about that in your book. I mean, you talk about all of it. Like, I'm just so amazed at just how robust your book is. And so thank you for just really diving into all the details, of our body and just your faith and how the two should go together. But let's talk about vitamin D, the power of sunlight, and how it responds, how our body responds.
Yeah, you know, I talk about this in the context of supplements and in the context of, you know, vitamin D supplements specifically, and how I think that God's form of vitamin D is the far superior form, and that's the kind that we get from the sunlight, right? It only takes 15 to 20 minutes a day. If you, you know, have your shirt off or you have your thighs out or, you know, something, like, don't go out there completely covered up. And in 20 minutes, you can have, I think it's like 10,000 international units of vitamin D. And this is the real stuff, right? All the, the vitamin D that we're told in the form of pills. You know, we take these vitamin D3 pills and they might say 5,000 IUs or 1,000 IUs, right? This is all storage, the storage version of it. It's not the active version of vitamin D that does so many wonderful things in your body. And part of the problem with the way that we have been looking at vitamin D with this supplement first approach, especially in our sunscreen culture and our, you know, culture that says don't get too much sunlight, sunscreen. Right?
Yeah.
And so if you're just relying on supplements, the number that's going to be on your blood panel might indicate, oh yeah, you're in the green, you're good to go. But that's measuring the storage version of the vitamin D hormone. It's not measuring the actual active form of vitamin D. And you know, you can think that you're good to go when it comes to the storage version, and you can be deficient on the active version of vitamin D. So a lot of doctors do not understand this relationship. And I think part of the problem with having too high of vitamin D levels is that it can sap a lot of the other nutrients in your body. For example, your liver has to convert this storage hormone into the active form. That takes a lot of energy. Well, magnesium is necessary to drive this process, to drive a lot of the enzymes that make this process happen. And so your magnesium levels go down as a result of that. And so you start to have all sorts of mineral imbalances because you're taking this thing that your doctor told you need because of a blood test that isn't really accurate, when you could just go outside, right? That's the moral of the story. Just go outside.
God gave us what sunlight, we need, right?
Yeah. And then people say, okay, well, what am I going to do in the winter? It's like, well, maybe God didn't actually intend us to get vitamin D from food very much, because it isn't in too many foods. It's really only available from the sunlight.
Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe these times where there is not a whole lot of sunlight, maybe we're not supposed to have a whole lot of vitamin D. It is a fat soluble vitamin, and we can stock up on it for the winter and release it from our fat if we have healthy fat, and that can get us through the winter, right?
Yeah.
So maybe indiscriminately pill popping in the winter isn't necessarily the best idea.
Yeah, actually that's good. I'm glad we're talking about this, because there is this idea that, oh, I just need to supplement. And I've prescribed vitamin D3 and K2 as well. Like I'm a big proponent of vitamin D, but definitely the sun first, right? But you're absolutely right. I mean, God knows what he's doing, and we have tried to make it better, you know, and, you know, we're going to stay up later and longer and have artificial light. Well, what is that doing to us? And, you know, we're not sleeping as much. And, you know, it's really interesting how we have just paved the way to our own detriment, really. You know, it's just really eye-opening on so many levels. So it's getting back to the basics, right? More or less?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we talked about this one thing we dialed in on, right? But especially when it comes to food, right? Just eat real food.
Yeah,
exactly. It's that easy. And that can be harder for us in today's broken food culture than it was in past societies. Of course, people didn't even know what, you know, you would have said real food. Like, what does that even mean a couple hundred years ago? And I think one of the reasons, you know, people have there are a lot of books out there that have biblical diets and you know, biblical theology of food. And we use a lot of New Testament verses to, you know, that maybe have food implications. And we say, you know, we're talking about avoiding junk food and stuff like that. It's like, okay, well, real food, health food, junk food, these weren't even categories. People were just talking
food was
about
just food.
Food.
Yeah.
The only food distinctions were food worship, you know, that was used in pagan worship, right? That was a no-no.
Right.
But like, people would have, there is no theology of food that's obviously there in the Bible, because these principles didn't need to be said. They need to be said now, because we live in a completely broken culture in which what is being sold as food isn't
fabricated.
Really food. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, they want to do their best and they're like, okay, I want to start eating real food, but they don't know how, right?
Yeah,
and so That's one of the things that I spend a lot of time on in the book is describing, okay, what are these four culprits of metabolic dysfunction? What are these things that pass as food that aren't really food? And just briefly, what, you know, the way that I list those out is our refined, highly refined sugars and grains, right? These are things that would never exist in nature. These are things that are modern indulgences. Talk about frankenfats, like these ultra processed oils, affectionately known as seed oils and vegetable oils, right? These are the things that have no historical value whatsoever, other than as, you know, machine lubricant in World War II before we started consuming them, right?
A buck.
Yeah, and then pesticides, these chemicals and food additives, and then some of the maybe misguided supplements that people take, that kind of rounds out those things. But, you know, people just don't really know what to avoid. And I think if you just avoid those things, everything else kind of works itself out. You've probably done about 75% of the work by just simply avoiding those things as much as possible, right? It's not about perfection.
Getting
it's
just foods about, without a label, just like a one ingredient food. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the food that doesn't have the label is fantastic, but even the food with the label, you know, there are some conscious producers of food out there that maybe there's 10 ingredients, but they're all things that your grandma would have recognized, right? And and those can be good, right? So I'm not totally whole food. I do think that there's a path for the culinary arts, and there's a path for the, you know, holistic recipes that testify to God's abundance and to the flavor that he desires for us. But it's just the ingredients, right? If you have whole ingredients, food-based ingredients, then you're probably doing it right.
Then you're going to be good. Well, that's so good. Well, I'm delighted to have you on, and I can't believe it's already been the time that it's been, because I want to keep going here. But, you know, your philosophy around food itself, I mean, not philosophy, but just because you're more toward meat and dairy, you consume those items, where I'm more whole food plant-based, and it doesn't matter. I think one of the reasons I wanted to bring you on too is that I want my listeners to think for themselves. I want them to, if the path that you're on works for them, great. If the path that I have for people works for them, great. I want them to listen to the Holy Spirit, right? And do what works best for them. And it's not about making anything one way or another. So like you say, just pragmatic and religious and that kind of thing. It's about really listening to your body, right? And again, going after whole food solutions. So I wanted them to hear from you because you just have a great book. Again, it's called Nourished by Design. And can they get that book just on Amazon, or where's a good place for them to get this book?
Yeah, Amazon is where it's being sold. I've got a hardcover, softcover ebook right now.
Hopefully and then an I also Audible have a- soon.
I know.
I'm putting in my request for that.
I will be working on that soon. So hopefully those people that aren't a huge fan of the paper book, or that just love to listen to books in the car, maybe that'll be an option soon.
Yeah. No, that will be so good. Well, thank you so much. As we wrap things up here, what is kind of maybe a message or something that is on your heart, like right now, this very moment, around Nourished by Design, that you really haven't had a chance to share with us, that you want to get off your chest and kind of wrap this episode up with? Maybe it's a prayer.
The big thing, you know, there's so much that is on my mind when it comes to this book, and the conversations that I've been having with people, and just the different things that people are interested in. Because like you said, there's so much in the book. It's quite a survey, I would say. It doesn't go super deep into any one area. It's just a survey of a variety of different things. And one of the things that I've been thinking about a lot is this idea of delight at the table. And I think that, you know, we can oftentimes consider food and the table to be a battleground, this idea where you got to strap on your armor and you're going to really just go to war with your diet, because that's how food is often presented. That's how diet culture is presented in our society, is this kind of negative, this idea that You have to restrict in some way. And if there's anything that I communicate in the book, I just hope that it's that God wants our diets to produce in us a certain delight. The key to Christian eating, and we talked about like food freedom. That is one of the keys. I think we're free from the law. Yes. We're free from any sorts of dietary restrictions that would be ceremonially placed on us. And that we are available to eat, right? Yeah.
Thank you, Jesus.
But the biggest thing is thanksgiving, right? The biggest thing that you hear about is receive everything with thanksgiving. That's the mark. That's the posture of a Christian. And so that's something that translates into our diets. But I think that to have a genuine thanksgiving, you have to experience delight in your meals. And so what does that look like? I think that looks like flavor, right? I think you have to appreciate real flavor that comes from God, that comes from real food. And that is really the key to genuine thanksgiving, right? I think it's hard to say, bless this deep fried chimichanga with gummy worms and Coca-Cola, because it's something that it's obviously wrong.
I think
God.
The typical Christian that's eating that is like, Lord, please protect my body as I'm getting ready to dive into this food.
Yeah, it's hard to be genuinely thankful for that.
Yeah.
Because it's not a gift that you're receiving from God. And so if you're looking at food in any other way than as a flavorful gift that's life-giving and nourishing, then you're probably doing it wrong. And so that's one of the key messages in the book. And that's yeah. one of the things that I've been trying to communicate to as many people as possible, because that's really the core message. And everything in the book, from the science, and including all the technical stuff, is designed around that message, right? Producing delight and giving us the assurance that we can eat a flavorful diet as God intended it.
I love it. I love it. Thank you. That like puts a bow on this episode. So thank you so much for your time and your insight. And again, those of you that are listening, go and get Nourished by Design from Amazon. I'll put a link in the show notes as well. But God bless you, and thank you as you are on this journey of being on all these podcasts and sharing your book with so many people. It's going to do really well. I believe that.
Thank you, Wendy. I really appreciate it. It's a real pleasure to be here, and I hope you have a good day.
You too. Well, thank you so much for tuning into this episode. I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Andy Felton, and that you will go to Amazon and grab his book, Nourished by Design. I thoroughly enjoyed the read. I know you will as well. And I hope you really enjoyed this conversation. Now, I'm going to ask, if you don't mind, I'm going to be bold. Would you be willing to give this episode, or actually the show, excuse me, a 5-star rating and a review? Because when you give Visibly Fit podcast a 5-star and a review, it bumps things up into the algorithms and people can find the show. So please, 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 if you don't mind, do that. It only takes about less than 5 minutes. And I am going to say thank you in advance. It does make a big difference. And I also am going to conclude this episode by saying that if you are looking for a program to get you into your healthiest, best self, mind, body, spirit, emotions, go to getvisiblyfit.com. And I would love to take you along that journey, hold your hand and get you to the other side of health and healing. If you're in a place of dis-ease, and if you're in a place of not feeling your best in your own skin, and you want to be off medications and have more energy and just have a better way of living, mind, body, spirit, emotions, then let's do this. I've got a 1-pay and also a 3-pay. You can also use your HSA or FSA accounts. So again, go to getvisiblyfit.com. It is a 7-week program, but you have access to it for a full year. You get meal plans, grocery list, recipes, workouts, Visibly Fit exercises, workouts. I think there's a library of over 65 or 70 different workouts that you have at your fingertips. You also have coaching with us every week. And I'm in that group and I'm coaching you right along, and it's faith-based. So we do prayer and devotions, and we have just such a special, beautiful community. Would love to have you join us. So if you're interested, go for it. If you have questions, ask me. All right. I'm here for you, social media, or you can email me at wendy@wendypet.com. All right. God bless, and hope you enjoyed the episode. All right. Catch you next time.
Well, that's a wrap for today's show. So thank you so much for tuning in. I love spending this time with you. To learn more and get more free resources, just head on over to wendypet.com. And thank you in advance for sharing this episode and this podcast, following and subscribing not only to this podcast, but finding me on social media, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, wherever you are, I'm probably there too. Until next week and our next podcast time together, make it a visibly fit day.